You might have read or heard that students at Aragon High School in San Mateo received an iconic guest this last week. You see, they were visited by Minnie Jean Brown Trickey. She is one of the Little Rock Nine, one of those who integrated Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. She was 15 years old back in 1957. You may have seen footage or pictures of these nine brave African-American students as they walk up these steps. They are surrounded on either side by a phalanx of National Guardsmen with their weapons drawn. And on either side of them are hundreds of white students prepared with hate. Miss Brown Trickey shared what it was like to walk up those steps that day, and then she shared what it was like to be on the inside. For instance, she always made sure to have another set of clothes in her locker at school because it was often that someone would accidentally spill soup all over her. She also shared with the students that she and the other eight were spit upon and tripped. They were shoved into lockers. But what she shared with those students this past week was also something I had not heard or taken in before, which was what happened with the rest of the student body. So of Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, there were about 200 students, white students, who tormented the Little Rock Nine verbally, physically. There were also about 20 white students who, in spite of the tide against them, remained steadfast in word and deed with their kindness. And Minnie Jean Brown Trickey shared that there were 1,900 other students who stood by silent. And this week, I guess that stayed with me because we often, when we tell the story of Little Rock Nine, we hold up those nine courageous young people, and we need to, because they were icons of light in the midst of darkness. They led the way in the shadow of the valley of death. And we also tell the story of the 200, that wolf is real. And we tell the story of the 20 who remain by their side. But how often do we tell the story of the Little Rock 1900? Those who were present but stood by and did nothing when the wolf came. The hired hands who fled when danger approached. I think we don't tell that part of the story sometimes because it's uncomfortable. I think we've all been there in some form or fashion when something is happening around you and you know that it's wrong and you want to do something, but you just can't or you just don't. We can identify with this hired hand because this wolf, it is there lurking, and we feel the fear of what will happen maybe to us if we stay, if we say something. And so often we don't. And the reason in John's gospel why the hired hand leaves is because the hired hand doesn't feel like the sheep belong to them. That's what this Greek around ownership is about. It's about belonging. And when the hired hand doesn't feel like those sheep belong to them, it's much easier to turn away. The good shepherd remains. I recently was in a conversation with someone who knows what it's like to remain. She moved here from the Midwest recently, had been living out in the Midwest for many years, had built an excellent life, was a farmer actually, and had developed this farm that was really successful. It was a farm that fed well over 100 families with its CSA. She had developed a network of people because she served as a hub for many people in the community. Through her hard work and her collaborative efforts, she was rooted. And it was good, and except for the fact that her mom lives here in Berkeley, and so every time she would come back here, she would really enjoy the time with her mom, but then would have to leave and go back to the farm, because the animals and the weeds, they don't really care much about vacation that you've banked. It was after one of those recent trips that she realized that something just wasn't right. It wasn't the farming, it was the math. Her mom is elderly and has some underlying conditions, and how many years does she have left? 5, 6, 7? And if my friend came back, even, you know, 2 times a year, 7 days each trip, the math is maybe 100 more days. She realized that for her, that wasn't sufficient for the kind of relatedness and belonging that she wished to have. It didn't add up. So she made this radical decision. She uprooted herself, leased the farm to those who could carry it on, moved here to Berkeley, in with her mom, found a job at a school where she can teach kids about plants and ecology and where food comes from and how it's all interconnected. And she's here now with her mom for this season, for this time, for this person. She has laid down her life. Whenever we talk about following this Jesus the Christ, it seems to me that we recognize it when it follows a certain pattern. Because as we begin to follow, our lives start to take this cruciform shape. That is the shape of sacrificial love. It's a kind of love that we don't always see, because it's not something that is about compulsion. Right? You can't compel somebody, whether by force or by law or by guilt, to lay down their life for another. There is no quid pro quo. If I lay down my life, if I sacrifice my love for you, you don't owe me anything. If you do the same for me, I don't owe you anything. There is no transaction. And so, with this kind of love, it runs contrary to so much of how we are formed by our culture. Yet this is the path of the Good Shepherd, the reminder that we are given that we belong one to another. And it's a reminder that we saw a couple weeks ago. You may have heard or read what took place. For those who don't know, in our parish house here, for the last several years, we have offered respite to those leaving the ICE Detention Center here in Richmond as they are seeking asylum or somehow involved in the immigration process. If they have nowhere else to go, they come here and are our guests. And so we've had a guest now for several months. We'll call him Eric. He was forced to leave his home country because of the violence that was there. He arrived here in the United States at San Francisco International Airport, and upon touching ground, turned himself over to the authorities and was arrested and detained at the West County Immigration Detention Center for months and months and months. He was finally released on bail and came here to be with us. And after being with us for several months, he was summoned to an immigration court hearing in San Francisco a few weeks ago. And he was joined by the All Souls accompaniment team and other folks. The immigration judge, noting his efforts and what he was having to leave, granted him till October to find an attorney and to make his case for asylum. The accompaniment team that was with Eric was overjoyed. They were thrilled at this news, and they walked out of the courtroom and right into the arms of a plainclothes ICE officer who, along with other officers, arrested Eric, denied him an interpreter to let him know what was happening, took him away into an elevator, and he was gone. The accompaniment team was devastated, but somebody had the presence of mind to ask where he was being taken, and they found out that it was 630 Sansom, and they gathered together and hustled over there and talked to one officer and then another until they found themselves in a bare, neon-lit room. And the ICE officer they talked with said, "Are you the folks from the church?" And they said, "Yes." And the officer said, "Well, because of the support that you're giving, because he's staying at a church, he might be able to get out on bond again." But they didn't know. And they left, and it was a long BART ride home. But then they found out that, in fact, because of all that, Eric was getting a $3,000 bond, which was raised that afternoon by members of All Souls Parish. And Eric came home from the West County Detention Center to our parish house the next afternoon. And it was because these courageous people refused to flee. They remained. Now I know why we have the Little Rock 1900. I know why the hired hand runs. Maybe you do too. Because the wolf is real. The wolf, whether it is absence or presence, the fear that is instilled in us, the fear that we will be exposed, the fear that it will not be enough, the fear that we will be next, is real. And maybe the wolf is whatever lurks at the edge of the pasture, prowling, waiting, scattering the relationship we have with God, with each other, threatening our understanding of fundamental relatedness. All of us, at one time or another, we cower before the wolf, and we wonder if this is the only way. And then we come close to this Jesus. And we enter into the story of the one who is Easter, who knows all of the flock. And we come back to this over and over again, and we begin to trust that we all belong together, so much so that we can lay down our lives for each other and follow the path of the Good Shepherd on the way back home.